We're going to continue looking at the book of Job as we're following in the daily Bible reading plan. And today we're coming up to Job chapter 38, beginning with verse 1. And we will be reading verses 1 through 7, Job chapter 38, verses 1 through 7. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now gird up your loins like a man, and I will ask you, and you instruct me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who set its measurements, since you know, or who stretched the line on it? On what were its bases sunk, or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together, and all of the sons of God shouted for joy." So you remember that as we go through the book of Job, there's this back and forth that's taking place. And what's happening is at the very beginning, you have this situation where Job is under trials, and he's everything that he's worked for, everything in his life is taken away from him. And he starts to question God, and he starts to challenge God. And it got pretty ugly as far as how much he was challenging God. In fact, if I could just read this just briefly, and I just want to know if anybody here would relate to anything that Job is saying when we go back to the beginning of the book. Listen to what he says. "Let the day perish on which I was to be born, and the night which said, 'A boy is conceived,' may that day be darkness. Let not God above care for it, nor light shine on it. Let darkness and black gloom claim it. Let a cloud settle on it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize it. Let it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months." You see, everything he's talking, this is all just about one night when he was born. That's all he's talking about. When he was born, that he's cursing the day he was born. "Behold, let that night be barren. Let no joyful shout enter it. Let those curse it who curse the day, who are prepared to rouse Leviathan. Let the stars of its twilight be darkened. Let it wait for light, but have none. And let it not see the breaking dawn, because it did not shut the opening of my mother's womb or hide trouble from my eyes." Listen to this. "Why did I not die at birth? Come forth from the womb and then expire? Why did the knees receive me, and why did the breast that I should suck? For now I would have lain down and been quiet. I would have slept then. I would have been at rest with kings and with counselors of the earth who rebuilt ruins for themselves, or with princes who had gold, who were filling their houses with silver. Or like a miscarriage which is discarded, I would not be as infants that never saw light. There the wicked cease from raging, and there the weary are at rest. The prisoners are at ease together. They do not hear the voice of the taskmaster. The small and the great are there, and the slave is free from his master. Why is light given to him who suffers, and life to the bitter soul, and long for death, but there is none, and dig for it from then for hidden treasures, who rejoice greatly and exult when they find the grave? Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden and whom God has hedged in? For my groaning comes at the sight of my food, and my cries pour out like water. For what I fear comes up on me, and what I dread befalls me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet, and I am not at rest, but my turmoil comes." Do you relate to what he's saying there at all? I know that we don't verbalize everything, that every thought that crosses our mind, but I just wonder if you've ever thought anything similar as what Job is saying there. And what he's saying, when all of this is happening to him at the very beginning, he's saying, "Cursed is the day I was born." And then as he goes through that, why should I even be alive? What is the purpose of my existence? Why should I live just to suffer? And did you notice at the end, this is in chapter 3, by the way, but if you notice at the end of chapter 3 where he goes, he says, I cannot rest. I cannot, I'm not at peace. I can't rest. I can't go to sleep. I'm just constant. You ever been there? Where the suffering is so bad that you just can't even rest. And what's interesting about suffering is it really is all relative for the most part. I mean, wouldn't you say it's relative, right? Because one person says that they're suffering with this, and then somebody over here is suffering with this, and you're looking and saying, well, they don't really know what suffering is, but the suffering they're experiencing and the emotions they're having from the sufferings is what they share in what's taking place. And Job is at the point now where he is saying, cursed be the day I was born. I should have never been born. This should have never happened. And then he goes on to the end saying, I'm not at peace. I'm not at rest. You know, in essence, what he's saying, and when anybody says something to that effect, they're basically saying, God, you messed up. God, you ruined this whole thing. See, because when you start making statements like that, that says, I should have never been born, then that really puts you on the level of competing with what God has allowed or what God is doing. And what you get on that level, then that's a scary level to be on, is when you get to that point where you say, I should have never been born, or if you get to the point saying, oh, my life should be over, hey, guess what? It's really not up to you. It's up to God. And once you're on that level where you're challenging God and what he has done and what he has accomplished, that's very dangerous when you get to that point when you begin to say that God messed up. And God made a mistake, and God is wrong, and we need to change what God has done. And that somehow, as Job is trying here, somehow if we give God our opinion, or Job giving God his opinion, somehow it's God's going to listen and go, oh, thank you so much, Job. I didn't even think about that. I didn't even realize that. So I'll go ahead and I'll put things back in the way you want them because, you know, I'm just God. It's not like I know what I'm doing. So I want to listen to you. And without getting too specific, I would say that if there's one thing that a sinful culture always does is challenge God and his ways to the point that we are going to change what God has put in order. And when we begin to change or even attempt to change what God has put in order, according to his scriptures, we are on dangerous ground. Because then we are messing with something much deeper than just a simple disobedience against God or just saying, I'm not going to do what God said. But if we're challenging God and his ways, then we are on dangerous ground. So, what happens here, as you know the story in Job, he starts lashing out against God. Job's friends come along and they begin to correct him. And they say, Job, why are you talking this way? You know this isn't right. Your attitude towards God is wrong. You know you shouldn't be speaking this way to God. Then there's a time for Job to come back. And Job tells them, no, I know I'm right. Now explain why. And they go back and forth all the way until we get up to chapter 38, which is where we are today. Chapter 38 is a very powerful chapter because Job is finally getting what he's asked for with the chapters leading up to that, where he's saying, why won't he make himself known to me? Where is he in the midst of this? I want to talk to God and I want to tell him how he messed everything up. And listen to what God says. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Now, right there, that's enough, isn't it? He answered him out of a whirlwind. Your translation might say a tempest. It's basically a storm. That God is speaking to Job from a storm. Now, I don't know about you, but if a storm started to talk to me, I would probably listen. Because then I know I'm dealing with something much bigger, right? So this is actually God's voice coming out of the storm and speaking to Job. Because why did God do that in the Old Testament? Several times he'd show up by way of storm. He'd show up in the whirlwind. Why did he do that? Well, the storm shows power. All of us get that, right? Storms show power. It doesn't matter what kind of storm you're talking about. We really have no control over the storms, whether we think we do or not, or whether we think we can handle ourselves during it or not. We have zero control over that. And I think it's important for us to realize, especially in 2021, who it is that actually controls the weather. Man does not control the weather. Man isn't even the best at evaluating it, as you know. But it's God, and storms show us his power, and storms show us how powerful God is. And if you've ever been in the middle of a storm, you know that you see the power of God, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. There's nothing you can do to change it. So at the very beginning, God is speaking to Job from the storm, from the whirlwind. And listen to what he says. He says, "Who is this?" Now, I love that first part, and that's great. That's exactly what he said in the Hebrew, too. This is kind of like, who is this that's wasting my time? Who is this? Who are you? Why should I listen to you? He says, who is this that darkens my counsel? Or that darkens counsel. You know, see, this is a powerful statement God is making, because when he says darkens counsel, he's not just talking about that Job is not adhering to God and his ways, but that what's happening is Job is causing God's counsel to be darkened, not just to him, but to everyone else who hears Job complaining about God. Did you ever think that that actually happens? That if you complain about God, that you're darkening God's counsel, not just to you, but you're darkening his counsel to those who hear you complain about God? Because that's what God's saying. He's saying, who is this that darkens my counsel? Who are you? Who is this guy that's saying this? And not only is he affecting my counsel to him, but he's affecting the counsel to everybody else. And you don't have to read very far to understand. God's pretty angry at this point at Job. And God is really just kind of laying it out for Job. And if you read the entire next couple chapters, God doesn't hold anything back and just lays into Job. But listen to what he continues to say. He says, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Who is this that darkens my counsel, not just to them, but to everybody else, with words without knowledge? You ever had words without knowledge before? You ever heard words without knowledge before? You ever said words without knowledge before? Basically, the whole idea of saying words without knowledge is it's just gibberish. It's not making any sense. It's coming out, and it's the way it's coming out is not clear in any way. You're just kind of just talking. And it's just words, and there's no basis, there's no wisdom, there's no knowledge to it. It's just words coming out, and God is correcting Job for that. And he says, who is this who darkens my counsel, not just to them, but to everyone around, with words, but no knowledge? It was said many years ago. I don't know who actually coined the phrase, but I think it's a good one, and I think that we can use it every year, use it probably every day. I think it was a comedian. I don't remember exactly. Some of you may remember this. So several years ago, somebody coined the phrase when they said, there's too many people with microphones in their hands nowadays. Too many people are out there talking. And too many people are listening. And I would add to that, now that we have social media and everything, there's too many people who have access to communication who have no business communicating. Why? Because so much communication you see on social media is words without knowledge, words without a basis, words without wisdom. They're just saying something. And it's so powerful because words, we don't realize how powerful words are. Especially throughout Scripture, words are so powerful. They're not just something we can just take and leave and it's no big deal and we don't need to pay attention to what is said. Words are extremely powerful all throughout the Old Testament and even into the New Testament. And you think about how many times we're told to guard what we say. The book of James talks about that and talks about taming the tongue and how out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. You see, there's something about our words. And at the very beginning of that chapter, James says, not many of you should presume to be teachers because you're going to be judged more strictly. Why? Well, because teachers say a lot. There's a lot of words coming out. And if there's a lot of words coming out of your mouth, you're going to be judged more strictly by those words. And so the whole adage of thinking before we speak really is something we should adhere to or be thinking about because of how powerful words are. I asked this at Bread and Soup on Friday, but I've always been curious about this. Just by a show of hands, how many of you have ever been hurt by a word? Okay. And how many of you have ever realized that a word you used was hurtful? Everybody see how many hands went up both times? You see how much our words do damage and we can't ever bring them back? Words are strong and they're powerful. And so God is convicting Job here, and he's saying, your words without not you're speaking with no knowledge. You're not making any sense, Job. You're just flying off the handle. You're just saying whatever comes to mind. There's no thought going into it. There's no knowledge. Then he gives him an instruction. He gives him a commandment in verse 3. He says, now gird up your loins like a man, and I will ask you, and you instruct me. Now, this is a very powerful statement because this has been used throughout the Old Testament. It's also used in the New Testament. It's been used in modern-day movies. Some people make fun of this phrase. Now, gird up your loins. You know, gird up your loins. What does that actually mean? You probably know what this means. Back in that day, men wore robes, not dresses. They wore robes. And in fact, I was even wondering if there was a video out there that would explain this. And one that I found did explain it, but I didn't think it was the best one to put up here. But they basically said that this is the reason why we now have pants was because of what they had to do to gird up their loins. But the whole issue was you're in a robe, and if you had to be ready for battle, you had to be ready to fight. You couldn't run in the robe. So they would pull the robe up and tie it so it wouldn't be in their way, so that they'd be ready to fight. That was in their day and age. He's basically saying, get ready to fight. So God's telling Job, now, you, Job, get ready to fight. Interesting, isn't it? Now, who's talking to Job again? God. God's talking to Job. So God's talking to Job, and God's saying to Job, okay, hey, who is this that speaks empty words with no knowledge? Hey, Job, all right, get ready to fight. Who's God telling him to get ready to fight? God. This is pretty much God saying to Job, all right, put your money where your mouth is, buddy. Let's go. I didn't know God talked like that. But that's what he's saying to him. Come on, man, gird up your loins. Let's have this out. And listen to what he says. He says, now gird up your loins like a man, and I will ask you, and you instruct me. See, think about what he's saying. Now, I will ask you, and you instruct me. You tell me where I'm wrong. Let's have this out. Again, Somebody's speaking to Job from a storm, and now you know that it is God. At this point, how many of us would be looking up to God saying, oh, I'm sorry, no need, I don't need to fight, I'm good. I don't need to say anything, it's all good. You know, I'm very sorry, God, I shouldn't have said a word, I shouldn't, no, but God is coming in and God's saying, no, you're gonna say this crazy stuff without thinking, you're gonna say these empty words without knowledge, let's go. Now, I just want us to think just for a moment. Has God ever done that to you? Number one. Do you think God ever will do that with you? Number two. And number three, do you think that is actually the way God acts? Because I know there's arguments that somebody would say, well, that's the Old Testament. The Old Testament God, he was mean. Old Testament God was mean. He had it out for everybody. He was mean. And then Jesus came, and now God's all loving and forgiving. But before, mean. And then New Testament, oh, he's loving and forgiving. And we always forget about what Jesus did. At least we don't like to put it in terms that it has anything to do with us. But Jesus goes into the temple, and what does he do? He lets them have it, man. He makes a whip out of cords. He chases them out. He overturns the money changers' tables. So don't tell me that it's not within God's personality to treat Job or to talk to Job this way, because God, just because God is loving does not mean that he does not stand for what is true and just. And sometimes God uses what we have come to know as tough love. Yes, God does that when it's best for the person involved. And this is what Job needed on this moment. And I wonder, how often do we need the same thing from God? Do we need for God to speak to us in the same way, where he would say, who is this? Why are you talking this way? If you really believe what you're saying, let's go. Listen to what he says. I will ask you and you instruct me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who set its measurements? I love this. Since you know. Or who stretched the line on it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Who did this, Job? Were you there? Since you know so much that you can challenge my ways, since you know so much that you can challenge what I do, since you know so much that you can question me, were you there, Job? And this goes on and on. As you can read the next couple chapters, God just lists everything that Job has no clue about and just nails him to the wall and says, this is the Chad translation, shut up. Job, close your mouth. You have nothing to say of any importance, and all you're doing is darkening my counsel, not just my counsel to you, but also darkening the counsel to everyone else who hears you. I think that there have been times God has done this with Chad. And let me rephrase that. It hasn't been times. It's been multiple times. Many times, ever since I started following Christ, that God kind of talked to me in this manner, in this way. Because basically what's happening is God is reminding Job, it's as if God just kind of backed off a little bit, let Job's friends try, and just kind of let Job get to this place on his own. And then he steps in and says, hey, here I am, let's have this out. But This whole purpose that God is doing, he's reminding Job that, hey, I'm speaking to you from a storm. What are you speaking from? Hey, I have the power, you don't. Hey, I'm God and you're not. And he's giving to him the picture of how big God is compared to Job. You know how many times in my life God has had to show me how big he is compared to me? And it gets to that point where you're like, I have no business saying anything because you're God and I'm not. So what is the purpose of this message today? Well, the purpose is, do you think in any way, shape, or form right now in this moment, God needs to speak to you in this way? Any way at all, do you think that God needs to remind you today how big he is and how small you are? Because the problem is, at least in my experience, anytime God has attempted to do that with me, I like to run away from it because it doesn't feel very good. And it isn't something that I would call, at least not immediately, boy, I was just so blessed today when I was praying to God. No, it doesn't fall into that category. It doesn't even fall into the category of, boy, I was just so encouraged after that message today at church. No, it doesn't even fall into the encouragement category. I mean, this falls into the category of walking away and saying, wow, I messed up. And God himself had to remind me of how big he is and how small I am. How big he is and how small my thoughts are. How big his words are and how small my words are. How big his plans are and how small my plans are. And sometimes God just has to come along and put us in our place. The bottom line of how we approach God really affects a lot. But I mean, if you look at how Job is approaching God from the beginning in chapter 3 on, he's basically approaching God with the whole statement of, I know. That's the premise, that's the foundation, that's the basis of what he's doing. He's saying, I know. His friends come along, no, you don't know. He says, yeah, I do, I know. His friends come back again. No, you don't. Yeah, I do. I know. Don't try to tell me that. I know. But the whole time, I know. I know. I know. I know. I know. And then after God meets Job, and later on in chapter 40, what does Job say? He says, there's a hand over my mouth. I can't say anything. In other words, I don't know. So I want to ask you today how you approach God. How do you approach God in your prayer life? How do you approach God in coming into church? How do you approach God in studying his word? Because the biggest detriment we could ever have is approaching God with the premise being, I know. Instead, all of us, and I don't care how long you've been walking with Christ, I don't care how much Bible you know, I don't care how much education there might be, it doesn't matter. Don't care about your background, that every single person, this is what levels everybody following Jesus, that all of us approach his word and all of us approach him with the basis of, I don't know. Because you're much bigger than I am. So God, here's my thoughts. Show me where my thoughts are wrong. God, here's my words. Show me where my words are wrong. God, here's my personality. Show me where my personality is wrong. God, I don't know. This is your thing, man. This is yours. It's not mine. It's yours. It all belongs to you. It's not mine. Show me, God. I don't know. And you may say, well, what would happen if we would do that? What would happen if one person would do that? What would happen if 10 people would do that? What would happen if 1,000 people? What would happen if 10,000 followers of Jesus would do that together? You know what we would see? What a huge revival that we would see happen. You know what huge move of God we would see take place? Because the reason that he doesn't move, or the reason he doesn't move in the way we think he should, usually comes down to the fact that we're standing in the way. Why? Because we know. Instead of just saying, God, I have no idea. I mean, I have my opinions, I have my understandings, I have this, I have that, but God, I don't know. So lead me in the way you want to go, and I'll go. That's the only way we can truly serve Jesus. It's the only way we can follow him. So if God is coming at you this morning, talking to you the same way that he's talking to Job, appreciate it, accept it, be open to it, and say, God, thank you, because I need that. I need, what I need from you is not what I want, but what I need from you is what I need. Lord Jesus, thank you today for your word and for your truth. And God, we ask today that you would help all of us to start with the premise, to start with the foundation of, I don't know, but we know that you do. And Lord, so many times our arrogance gets in the way where we think we have it all figured out and we think we have it done. And the same way you talk to Job is the same way you need to talk to many of us, perhaps all of us today. You need to come and you need to say to us, who is this that darkens my counsel? Who's speaking words without knowledge? Who is this? Were you there when I formed the foundation of the world? No, Job, you were not. No, Chad, you weren't. None of us were. None of us can hold a candle to you. And so, God, right now in this moment, I pray that each of us would say, God, please evaluate me today. Evaluate my thoughts. Evaluate my prayers. Evaluate my scripture reading. Evaluate my attitudes. Evaluate my emotions. Evaluate my personality. Evaluate everything there is about me, because, God, I don't have a clue. I don't know, but I know that you do. And, Lord, if I need to be put in my place, Jesus, do it. Do it. If tables need to be overturned in my life, go ahead and overturn them. If you need to make a whip out of cords, go ahead. It doesn't matter. Whatever needs to happen, Jesus, so that I can be what you want me to be, do it. Because that's what this is all about. This isn't about me. This is all about you. We ask all these things in your name, the name of Jesus.